This is continuing coverage of the case against Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Well, she said nothing, not one witness, not one argument, not even a closing Hail Mary from the witness stand. After weeks of evidence, texts, timelines, and spiritual fiction turned into courtroom reality, Lori Vallow Daybell simply rested her case without presenting a single shred of defense. Now, in a courtroom, that's not just a pin drop moment, that's a mic drop, and maybe a smoke bomb, depending on how you see it. So the million-dollar question here, besides the literal million in the life insurance, is what does it mean that a defendant just folds her arms and rests without a word? Is it a strategy? Is it a surrender? Is it confidence? Or is it just someone who knows there's no salvaging this ship? Of course, we're talking about Lori Vallow Daybell joining us now to discuss, criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. Eric, when you have a defendant just like this, it doesn't bother to defend themselves in a case like this. What message does that send the jury, to the judge, and everyone else watching along at home with their popcorn?
You know, Tony, like you said, I think there are multiple interpretations, but just from like a common sense human perspective, often the jury wants to see something from the defense. They've heard all the prosecution witnesses. They've heard the cross-examination and, you know, the defense's attempt to undermine those witnesses. But usually the jury is like, okay, what's coming from this side? What can you show me that is going to sway my opinion in this case? And here, there was no such showing.
Were you surprised that Lori decided not to do anything, not to go and take her turn as the defense? I believe she had witnesses on a list, but last minute decides not to go any further. What do you think happened here?
Yeah, you know, it's a little hard to glean. You know, when you're dealing with other attorneys, an attorney on the other side of the case, you can kind of play chess with them because you can anticipate their moves. You can sort of think, hey, what are they thinking? What strategy do they have? And how do I counter that? When you have a pro se defendant, that goes out the window. And it's hard to really, you know, think into why did they do this and what was their objective? I wonder if it was just sort of a lack of competence or if it was that she feels supremely confident that the government hasn't proven their case.
That's the big question, because at the very end where the judge said, are you going to be presenting a case? She kind of reservedly said, nope. I rest. I'm wondering, was that a spontaneous moment of Lori kind of like doing a F you to everybody? Or is it, you know, was she really planning on doing that? I couldn't read if it was spontaneous, crazy, or what at that moment in time. Do you think this is part of her strategy all along?
Well, you know, a seasoned trial tactician would make that call on the fly usually, especially in terms of whether the defendant is going to testify. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes the attorney knows whether they're going to call their own witnesses on the defense's behalf. But here, you know, Lori is kind of flying by the seat of her pants. She has made a valiant effort here and there on some of this questioning. But I wonder if it was just kind of, you know, reading the writing on the wall or just kind of being done with this entire process and feeling some air of resignation.
Yeah, like maybe she doesn't want to play the game anymore. Like, I'm done. I'm going to take my toys home. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. She's in prison for the rest of her life. But I mean, it does matter to those who lost Charles and to Brandon Boudreau, who was shot at. You know, it does make a difference to some folks. Do you think that the state met its burden of proof? Because at the end of the day, we did not ever hear anything that definitively, literally says, let's kill Charles. It was in code. That's certainly there. But is that code enough to say that it was, you know, completely that's what the goal was? Or is, obviously, she still has closing arguments, so she can bring up something there. I wonder if she's going to say, well, Nephi meant something other than what you guys are interpreting it to be. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, this was not a slam dunk case for the prosecution from the beginning, in my opinion. You know, in order to prove conspiracy to commit murder, you got to prove there was an agreement between two people and that Lori took an overt act in furtherance of that agreement to kill Charles Vallow. Here we have some coded spiritual language, the Nephi thing. I guess he was a religious figure who justified murder. So, of course, that's problematic. But one thing that I didn't see was Alex's assent to whatever offer Lori might have been making. And then also, what was Lori's overt act? Just you know, asking for a parental exchange of the child at a place, and then Alex shoots the guy? Is that enough to get us there? I would be astounded if Lori beats this, but there's at least a chance she might.
You know, there is. It's not a trial of her personality. And that's what, you know, it seems like in a lot of cases it ends up being. It certainly seems like it over in Karen Reedland. But this one, it's not. We knew she was going to come across crazy. And she certainly succeeded at that. But yeah, at the end of the day, crazy doesn't necessarily make a murderer, even though we know that she is to her kids and everything else. But yeah, here, I don't know. I mean, I do know, but I don't know. I don't know that a jury will see it that way. I feel like there really could be a possibility here that reasonable doubt does come into play. Were you thinking that the prosecution was going to have something a little more finite, a little more, you know, the hits today or something, in some sort of message, not just weird coded biblical text?
You know, I thought that there would be a more extensive presentation of evidence. I thought the trial would be longer. Mm-hmm. There'd be more witnesses. There'd be more pieces of evidence admitted to be brought back to the jury. This was a rather lean trial presentation mm-hmm. by the government. And I think whether intentionally or not, Lori made a good call by not testifying, because if she would have testified, those prior convictions for killing her children would likely have come in. Not necessarily the details surrounding them, but I think that she would have shot herself in the foot and sealed her fate. Now her fate is kind of an open question on this case.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And yeah, you're exactly right. Had she gone more forward, she came close already to having the kids being brought into this. She was walking that fine line, and the judge stopped her several times. Let me ask you this. Yes, Lori is her own attorney. She chose that herself. It wasn't any sort of forcibly, you know, you don't get an attorney, Lori. She chose it. The judge really held her hand through all of this. Was it too much? I mean, it was almost like you're looking at an injured animal and you're like, oh, let me help you along. But it's court. She's up for a murder charge. And I mean, if you let her go, the kids would already be in this. And there's other things that I'm sure would have ended up getting in based on her loose lips. Was that a bit much, in your opinion, for the judge holding the hand as much as she did of Lori?
You know, most jurisdictions, if they don't have an express rule, they have a common understanding that judges are going to give significant leeway and deference to a pro se litigant, just because the pro se person doesn't know what they're doing. And the court system doesn't want that inexperience to be the reason for a conviction. So I totally agree. This judge was really kind of playing patty cake with her and giving her some doing her some favors here and there. But that's rather common to see when there is a pro se litigant. And I would note this judge was incredibly understanding and patient throughout the whole process.
Would it have been creating appellate issues at the end of the day if he didn't reach out his hand and help her so much? I mean, she is her own attorney. She's making her own decisions. Shouldn't you just have to lie in the bed that you create? I know, you know, that's not usually how it works, but I mean, I don't know. To me, it did feel like a bit much, but I get what you're saying, that it could have been an appellate issue. Is that correct?
So I think that, you know, Lori really could have made any number of errors. And the judge was sort of guiding her away from that, steering her away from something that could open the door to the children coming in. Certainly when there's a pro se litigant and there's a conviction, there can be a slew of appellate grounds brought once that appeal is lodged. And so I think the judge was being extra careful here to try and avoid any such appeal, because this judge wants finality if there ever is a conviction, and that it not be overturned.
How do you think, I mean, obviously we know this case, we've watched it, we know the ins and outs of a lot of it. The jury, you know, it supposedly they don't know it that well, enough that they can be, you know, people who can decide this thing without any sort of prejudice. But with what they heard in that courtroom, basically the one side of everything with Lori and Nephi and Chad and all sorts of just, you know, crazy shit. Do you think they're walking away thinking that she's as crazy as she is, considering how she did present herself in court? She did present herself, I think, better than expected, but it didn't really go that far into crazy land. We went into some jealousy over a girl who dated Charles right before he died. That was kind of weird. But we didn't get preaching. We didn't get anything like that, at least not yet. There's still one more stage to stand on with the closing arguments. But I wonder how much Lori is looking as crazy as the rest of us see her, as the jury does here.
Tony, totally true. And I wonder if the jury is experiencing even some cognitive dissonance around this. Mm-hmm. You know, they see the evidence, which paints Lori as, you know, being out of touch and having these fantastical notions of otherworldly things. And she's sort of way out there. And then you see how she does in trial. And there wasn't much of that, like you said. So I wonder if the jury is thinking to themselves, like, is Lori able to turn this off and on? What is the explanation for the contrast between presentations of Lori in the evidence and then her own presentation at trial? That's going to be something the jury's grappling with.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.